I gotta do. You're gonna take these. They'll help you.
My next step was, I still had some things I wanted to do with this sort of so-called brutal prog thing. At the same time, I was getting ready to move to the West Coast, because when we went out and toured the West Coast in 2002, there was basically a welcoming committee for us there. All those bands, particularly John Dwyer, who was in a band called Pink and Brown at that point, now he's in the OCs, amongst other things. John was also kind of white trashy guy. He was from Rhode Island, but I think he kind of related to me in some ways, and he got it in his head that he was gonna convince me to move to the West Coast. So when we went, we played a show in Oakland, a show in San Francisco on one of our 2002 tours, and after one of the shows, John and a bunch of people took us out on this pub crawl, and we just went fucking nuts, and we got kicked out of like 6 bars. It was like a trail of tears.
Wow.
And at the end of the night, we were laughing so hard because it was just so insane. John Dwyer puts his arm around me. He goes, "Hey, buddy, you gonna move here?" And I said, "Yes, I am," because I was super fucking sick of Chicago.
Yeah.
Super sick of it. Sick of the politics, sick of the weather, sick of the people.
Well, yeah, because when I moved to Chicago, and I was there from 2001 to 2003, and you were still there, but I don't think you were really playing much.
No.
I mean, you know, other than like Chicago Sound.
No, I had pretty much, when I walked into the room by the end of my Chicago thing, people would kind of roll their eyes and go, "Oh God, he's here. What's going to happen now?" I was really living up to people's expectations of me being a fucking asshole at that point, because I was just so angry and disgruntled and poor and felt like things weren't working out, and like, you know, I was just a really angry, unpleasant person. And the only people who thought I was cool were people who were basically angry and unpleasant. Yeah. So the last few years I was in Chicago, I was a real terror. When I came into the room, people definitely were looking for the escape route. And I had a few assistants in that regard. You know, basically, it was made very easy for me to move to the West Coast. I moved to Oakland. I put out all my shit in a fucking van, drove out to Oakland, and moved in with Jenny from Erasurada. Mm-hmm. I took Mike Green from Burmese's old room, and the guys from XBXRX were moving in. And
right.
We had kind of a cool little loft that we were living in Oakland that was pretty cheap. It was very supportive. The scene was really happening in the West Coast as far as experimental rock at that point.
Right.
I mean, it was so fucking fun. People could still afford to live there. The bands were great. I mean, that's still kind of in some ways like the best scene that I think I've been part of was that whole thing. It wasn't sustainable because eventually the tech thing took over and the rents started going back up. I even came a little late on it. By the time I got there in 2003, it was kind of like the prime years were kind of waning already.
Yeah.
So there was like a few more years left of the party vibe. I joined XBXRX. Basically started touring with them immediately. I was finishing up the solo Flying Luttenbacher's record system.
Yeah.
Submerged from Complete Disorder.
Right.
Which was very LSD influenced.
From sound to look of the whole thing.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like I was doing LSD all the time because that shit is exhausting. It's not. I was never a serious acid head. Like you hear about people who did acid every day for a year. I know a few of those people. I wasn't like that, but I was pretty much kind of straight edge until I was about 30. And then finally,
reality set in?
Well, no. Alex Perkalip was doing a lot of acid.
Uh-huh.
He was what I would call a guy who'd do acid every day for a year, and it finally caught up with him. I love that guy, but definitely affected him. I tried it, and I never imagined. I wasn't prepared for what it was, and I think it really was very therapeutic to me. I think it helped me become more in touch with my intellect and my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it helped me cope with reality. And I think it gave me lots of new ideas about what my life could be. And it encouraged me to take a lot of chances that I don't think I would have taken otherwise. I think it really opened me up. And honestly, you can't really get LSD-25 anymore. So when people sell acid, it's usually some kind of psychedelic speed, which
right.
is not necessarily very euphoric or good for you
right.
or anything. LSD-25, particularly in liquid form back in the early 2000s, this shit changed my life.
Huh.
It honestly took some emotional shackles like off my psyche. So yeah, I don't want to rhapsodize about it too long, but LSD at this point is pretty important to the path I was going down.
Yeah.
I had worked on the composition Rise of the Iridescent Behemoth for about 3 years, programming MIDI furiously on and off for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally just decided, well, I'm going to play out this brutal prog thing myself.
Right.
I'm just going to do it myself and take it all the way. And Systems Emerge, which was the second record I did for Troubleman in 2003, was done. It was basically finished in Oakland in my bedroom and mastered on LSD. and I nailed it.
Yeah.
I have to say, I think it's one of my greatest achievements artistically because I had no limitations at
right.
that point. And I just said, I don't care if this music's playable by humans. I don't care if it's reproducible. This is what's in my mind, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to inhabit it, and I'm going to use all the meta text is going to be there, and it's just going to be as metaphorical as I can possibly be with my approach to music. And I think it was as well received as an album like that would be received.
I mean, was it in any way due to also that there weren't people you felt could necessarily inhabit that music as well as you yourself could? I mean, not just an economic standpoint, but also a compositional standpoint that, you know, it's not even worth taking the time to bring other people in.
Good question. Learning to use MIDI was a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. I was introduced to MIDI programming by Jonathan Joe, who I played with in a kind of unpopular glam rock band called Vanilla. And Jonathan was about 10 years older than me, and he is definitely one of the people who was the most influential on my life when we were really involved in our lives together. He was kind of a mentor in a way, uh-huh. and I owe him a lot. We're still in touch. We're still friendly. He introduced me to computers because I was really, I've always been anachronistic and mm-hmm. I've always been a little obsolete. I've been more into having good ideas and then working with rocks and sticks.
Yeah.
I've never been into the current technology, as I say, with my flip phone. So the thing was, Jonathan was like, hey man, you know, all this stuff that you want to do, I'll give you a computer and you're going to be able to do recording, whatever you want. And I was like, what? And I started getting into it. And I was like, oh my God, I can do everything I want to do with this stupid machine.
Yeah.
And he basically showed me how to program MIDI, and I was like, wait, you just enter it in and it plays it back perfectly? Right. My mind exploded. And so I would say about 2001 or 2000 is when I really started upping my compositional game because I really had the tools to do it.
Uh-huh.
I basically had a robot that I could tell to do anything, and it would play it back perfectly. So there were no limits. And Systems Emerge was basically the farthest extreme of investigating that modus operandi.
Uh-huh.
I could basically apply every possible compositional approach rapidly and hear the results instantly and yeah. edit and fucking edit and edit and edit until my brains just exploded. So,
right.
I mean, to me, that was such a major turning point in my life. I was able to start writing music that was a lot more complex than I had been before.
Right.
But Systems Emerge, I just decided I was going to go all the way. I was just going to take it as far as yeah. I could. Some of that stuff was intended to be played and was played by the band, but uh-huh. by the time you get to this 20-minute long piece, I
yeah. mean,
it's literally physically unplayable. Although, yeah. for the drumming thing, there are some techniques where you could approach it. It possibly could be played, but it's no one's going to...
Right.
It just exists as a realization of the idea. Even the improvising on that album is very specific to me.
Yeah.
Like a lot of this sort of 12-string Ardo Lindsay type yeah. scrunk guitar stuff, it's really so specific what its purpose is and what the densities are of
right.
it that, I mean, it's not going to be transcribed and it's not going to be played the same. So right. I have no pretense of ever caring if that stuff's played. It's just myself working at a really high level of inspiration and not putting any real formalized limitations on myself. So I'm really proud of that record. But, you know, once I got to the West Coast, my living situation was really stable and it was affordable. And I had, you know, I was having great times. I was in love, you know. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of things going on that were very positive for me. Getting away from Chicago
yeah.
was mind-blowing to me because I was just like, oh man, I can fucking breathe. I can, yeah. like, I have new energy.
Thank you. shining into my eyes. Thank you.